And as you've heard earlier, the National Childcare Scheme minimum hourly subsidy will increase from next Monday from €1.40 to €2.14 per hour. There's also a fee cap on new services in the core funding scheme, which stipulates a maximum fee that participating providers may charge. Now, this is supposed to be a good news story for families and for childcare providers, but it seems that not everyone is happy. Last month, organisations representing 80% of Irish childcare providers raised serious concerns that nearly half may be forced to leave this core funding or grant-assisted model because of unsustainable rising costs and chronic underfunding of the sector. And have a listen now to Elizabeth Rowley. Elizabeth from Dublin is one of many parents who've experienced rising childcare costs after the creche her child attends withdrew from this core funding scheme. Her middle child has just started primary school, meaning that up to the end of August, two of her children attended full-time creche. While she thought that she would be saving money with her middle child starting in junior infants, she will be paying an additional €4,000, she says, for her youngest to attend creche.
Our creche announced in July that they were pulling out of core funding. Fees are going up by between 20 and 30%, 32% in our case. I had kind of done our numbers for this coming year for September and had predicted that we would be saving €4,000 in our childcare fees. We pay quite a lot based in Dublin, and it's kind of 1.5 times our mortgage. So, you know, a lot of money. We've been looking forward to making a bit of savings with the middle child starting school. However, with the withdrawal from core funding, we are going to have to pay €75 extra per week. So €4,000, basically what we thought we'd save, we're going to still pay the exact same money for the full year. Our creche is saying go to the government. I've emailed several TDs. We have had some engagement with local councillors who have set up meetings, but there hasn't really been much feedback from the government.
And can you tell me about the mental impact this has had on you?
We rent out a room in our case to try and make ends meet. We cycle everywhere. We try and save money where we can. And I know from kind of WhatsApp groups, people who had signed their kids up to the creche, people saying, I mightn't be able to return to work now because I can't afford 4,000 extra in childcare fees. And the government is trying to encourage people to go back to work after having kids. The system does not seem like it's fit for purpose. We've no choice. Our hands are tied. There are no other creches. There are no spaces available. They all have wait lists. I work part-time. I can't get a part-time creche. So we have to pay for full-time. So, you know, it's a real catch-22.
Molly O'Connor was talking there to Elizabeth Rowley. Minister Roderick O'Gorman, thanks for coming into studio this morning. And I want to get into the detail of what Elizabeth Rowley was saying there and the high cost of childcare for her and her family. Before we do that, in fairness to you, will you outline the changes that come into effect on Monday?
And thanks, Mary. Good morning. So from next Monday, the National Childcare Scheme subsidy that helps parents meet the cost of their childcare is going to increase even further. That's going to build on the investment I put into it last year, and it will mean that average childcare costs will have fallen by up to half for most parents over the course of the last 2 years. So my focus as minister has been to cut costs for parents, to increase pay for staff, and to improve sustainability, to improve investment for childcare providers. And I've done that through these increases in the National Childcare Scheme. They're going to save a family who are using full-time childcare €1,700 over the next year. I've done it through putting in place wage agreements for the very first time for childcare professionals. And I've done it through €331 million investment core funding, that direct support for childcare providers. So we've been able to do a lot over the last 4 years. But I'm very conscious of the situation that
Elizabeth Rowley, and not just Elizabeth Rowley. I mean, this is a story you hear from many parents who have children in childcare, if they are lucky enough to be able to secure a childcare place, because that is also a problem for them. But what do you say to Elizabeth? She says she's still going to be paying out this 4,000. She's gaining nothing.
So over the last 2 years, 95% of childcare providers have signed up to core funding. 95% of childcare providers have had their fees frozen and have passed on the increases in the subsidy to parents. This year, as we know, a number of services have indicated that they may withdraw. One of the issues they raised, and it was an issue that was raised on the programme earlier
on,
was the issue of the fee freeze.
Providers.
One of the ways we've been able to, in exchange for this very significant state investment, we froze fees at 2021 levels. And certain providers argue, well, we last raised our fees in 2014, 2015.
2017
It's not fair when we're trying to compete with the service beside us who last raised their fees in 2021. We've listened to that. We've heard that. We've actually made a change to core funding this year. So services whose fees are very significantly below the county average, they can actually make an application to increase their fees and bring and create equality. And I was surprised that wasn't
significantly
referenced there.
Below the county average. Mm-hmm. You say they can make an application to your office.
Mm-hmm.
And in what circumstances will you grant the increase?
So we will look at their costs, and we will look to see if it's necessary in order to ensure their sustainability to make that change.
When will that happen? I mean, it sounds like quite a complicated, paper-heavy process.
It's happening at the moment.
Has anybody been granted the increase?
Some services have been granted an increase. I don't have the exact figure for every service that's been granted right now, and I think it's probably too early because the process is ongoing.
How many applications have
about,
you had so
about
far?
About 8% of services have made this application so far.
So if we have, would this be correct then, if we have 4,500 childcare providers, you're saying about 8% of them
have submitted an application to be considered for this fee increase. So again, we've listened to the sector. They said this was an issue for us, and we've made this particular change because I'm very clear that, as well as looking to support parents, and we're doing that through the increases to the NCS this week, we also need to continue to support childcare providers in terms of what is a difficult sector. They have experienced increased costs over the last number of years, but it is really important to say the core funding that is available to them next year, that's grown 15% since last year.
But you need to bring them with you, Minister. Mm-hmm. And certainly the impression this morning from Elaine when we spoke to her was that they're being forced to close. That there's a high number of closures.
Well, the closure numbers in 2023, which is the last full year, are one of the lowest in the last 5 years.
Is that net closures or is that?
No, that's the net numbers are an increase because the net numbers are 129 extra services last year, but the number of actual closures is one of the lowest in the last 5 years. Every year, some services will close. Many childcare services are attached to a person's house, so if they retire, they're actually the service can't keep going.
Are you disputing the state of the childcare sector that was outlined to us earlier by Elaine?
Well, with respect, I think Elaine wouldn't accept the figures coming from TUSLA, which are the figures, which are the accurate figures in terms of they run the register of how many services, and those are the figures that my department work through. But what I don't dispute is there's still pressure on childcare providers. I absolutely don't dispute that, and on parents. And that's why we've taken these steps over the last 4 years. But it's also why, Marion, I suppose we're coming to the end of this term of government, and reflecting on where childcare is right now, having been minister for 4 years, I've been able to get a lot more state involvement in terms of investment, in terms of reform. But I actually think the state needs to be even further involved in early learning and care. And one of the points I'll be bringing forward in our manifesto come the general election, we have to look at things like the ECCE programme. That's not a legal right for parents right now, for children right now. We should make that a legal right. And by doing so, we place a greater responsibility on the state to deliver childcare services. And I'd actually like to see the state involved in providing childcare in areas where capacity doesn't exist.
On your watch.
What's been done in my watch is we've cut fees for parents, we've increased pay for staff, and we've improved sustainability for providers. But I do think when you look at Ireland compared to other European countries, we actually need to take the next step now, which is that the state gets directly involved in the provision of early learning and care.
I want to turn to other matters, the position of international protection applicants. Is there a winter plan?
Our plan is set out in the comprehensive accommodation strategy that is looking to move us away from that over-reliance on commercial providers and focuses on the delivery of accommodation on state-owned land. Mm. And over the last number of months, we've been able to provide accommodation for over 1,500 international protection applicants who previously were without accommodation. And we're doing that through bringing on sites like in Crooks Ling, like in Trudder, like in Ballyogan, and now like in Thornton Hall, where
tented
work has started. Tented accommodation initially, and that tented accommodation will be replaced by modular
when
accommodation.
When will it be replaced that, by modular
that, accommodation? That replacement process will take place over the next number of months.
But coming back, I said, is there a winter plan? This is the end of August. You know, there's already mm-hmm. an autumnal chill in the air.
Absolutely.
Give us another month and we will be into perhaps much more serious weather. And are people still going to be in tents?
It's likely that some tented accommodation will form part of our mix of accommodation going through the next number of months. I have to be frank about that, mm-hmm. just in terms of the pressure we're under. It is important to say, obviously, that these sites are serviced. People have access to sanitation, have access to meals. And that's why we focused on the rapid delivery of accommodation on these sites, because the alternative is the scenes we saw earlier this year, large numbers of people
but
sleeping rough on
Minister,
the streets.
Realistically, Minister, whether the general election is in November or the general election is in February, will you have provided any of the promised reception centres by then?
We'll have provided significant additional accommodation, and we'll have.
You're rolling tented accommodation in there with modular accommodation. I'm talking about the six reception centres. Will any of them be provided by the time we have an election?
We will have initiated work on the development of reception centres.
You were promising.
Pardon?
You were going to provide these reception centres before a general election.
I didn't make any statement in terms of providing things before a general election. What I said was we were going to make the immediate steps of ensuring that people weren't being left rough sleeping.
Have you identified all the sites?
We've identified a number of sites where we
How
could
many?
Potentially we have identified, I think, three sites where we will begin work. We have also a number
Can
of
Can you tell
other
us where
sites.
Those sites are?
We're looking at Thornton Hall, as you know. We've started work there already in terms of delivery initially of tented accommodation. We're also looking at sites where we are providing some where we are currently providing some international protection accommodation, like our accommodation centre in Athlone, like our accommodation centre at Knocklasheen. And we have a number of other sites as well where we're not in a position because we haven't confirmed our use yet to name them. And I think it is important, knowing, I suppose, how rumours have generated, and we've seen attacks on places that our department hasn't even been looking at over the last number of months. Okay. I think it's really important that I don't name sites until I've absolute certainty that we intend to use
them. And just finally, Micheál Martin's announcement to an end to purchasing of military equipment from Israel. Cathalbury was talking to us about this earlier on. Was this a cabinet decision?
Well, I was certainly aware that the Taoiseach wanted to act on the tone and tenor of the recent ICJ decision about Israel and its actions in both Gaza and also in the West Bank. Ireland has taken a very clear legal strategy.
Was it a cabinet decision?
It was a decision that the Taoiseach would have discussed with myself and with the Taoiseach in terms of the three.
Was the advice of the Attorney General sought? Because as we heard from Cathalbury, there are EU competencies here.
Well, look, the Taoiseach always works within legal advice and always gives very clear consideration to issues. But I think it is important to remember that Ireland has taken
You don't know if it was sought or not, do you?
Pardon?
You don't know.
I have full confidence that the Taoiseach.
You don't know.
I have full confidence that the Taoiseach is working within the legal advice available to us, because the Taoiseach has worked very closely with the Attorney General in terms of the legal proceedings in the Court of Justice that would have been the basis of this decision.
And if our airspace has been used to fly munitions to Israel, what action should we take?
I know the Department of Transport are examining that right now. If it is, there's certainly very strong anecdotal evidence that was the case. I do think both in terms of the individual company, but also the Israeli government, I do think we will have to take strong action. We cannot see our airspace
strong
being used
action.
for we cannot see our airspace being used for the transport transport of munitions that are going to be used in the war in Gaza.
What does strong action
means
mean?
Bringing in the Israeli ambassador and if it is proven that these flights take place, making it very clear that actions that aren't in compliance with international law in terms of the use of our sovereign airspace won't be tolerated by the Irish government.
Would you expel him?
I think I've always been of the view that expulsion isn't the way forward in terms of dealing, whether it's Israel, whether it's Russia. You need that ambassadorial link so you can deliver very clear messages to governments that you may disagree very strongly with.
Minister Roderick O'Gorman, thank you for your time this morning.